whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Alex Tuck fights for that puck. Good follow-up. Let's go. What a great follow-up. J.J. Paterka. Here's a turnover, and Alex Tuck's got a look. Scores! Alex Tuck gets 2-1 Buffalo. Here's the one. Tucker scores. Tage Thompson unleashes the TNT. And a power play goal makes it 3-2 Buffalo. Sabres need a goal from number 89, near circle. Tuck walks in face. One hand on the stick now, two as he works his way in. Scores! J.J. jammies that one into the back of the net, and the Sabres get their second of the shootout. If he can stop this one, Sabres will get the point. Chikrin locks in. Lukanen stays with it! Yes, he did! Saved by Lukanen. Sabres get the 2 points.
Hey, they're at Ottawa on Thursday, and it becomes that much more important once the... the dust settles off of the shootout win last night and the realization at the midway point of this season, just where they are still at and what lays ahead here in the immediate and long-term future. Marty, welcome. Where did you park today?
Park myself in the crease. That's okay. Where I park, and that's where I will always. I want to drive the Zamboni. That's what I want to do, and just say I've done it once, but nobody will trust me with that. Although Plowmaster 43 is already in being now this morning because we got quite a dusting of snow, and it's beautiful snow, light snow. So I think I could do the Zamboni, but you're right. Look, Sabres are 6 points out of a playoff spot. The last playoff spot now is being held by the Montreal Canadiens, who were last in the East 3 weeks ago. And that's really what it comes down to. Look, you get hot and you can make a move. The Montreal Canadiens have gotten hot and they made a move. Now, point percentage-wise, the Ottawa Senators are still the 8th team in the Eastern Conference right now. But, you know, those two games in hand that they have on Montreal, they're not one. And one of them is Thursday against the Buffalo Sabres. And I sure hope that the Sabres can, you know, win that and continue to climb. That's what you got to do. 4-2-1 in the last 7. That's what you got to keep doing and more to be able to get back in the conversation.
The Canadiens have won 8 of their last 10. That is what has allowed them to get to where they are.
Yep.
And it's the reason, a reason, that they passed Ottawa. The other reason is that Ottawa has fallen on hard times since Linus Allmark's injury.
Yes.
They have 1 win in the last 5 games. There were some interesting and amusing headlines across the NHL today in local markets. I plan to exhaust them before the end of this show. But one of them is Senator related, which is now very much top of mind. It's why we kind of, mentioned last night the Allmark injury on the broadcast and how it's affecting the Senators right now. Like, what does Ottawa do in the short term? This is a week to week and who knows thing with Allmark and his back. So
yes.
Do they go out and get a proven netminder? They technically have one in Anton Forsberg, but he's been coming back off of significant injuries and hasn't found his game. Marilainen's inexperienced. Like, what does Ottawa do at this point in time? Because they had to feel something they also, like a few other teams in their division, haven't felt for years. And that was, oh, we've got it together. We are on our way. Allmark was almost unbeatable for a 9 games. I don't mean wins and losses. I mean, didn't give up anything for 9 straight games.
He was great.
So
and
good.
The infirmary in Ottawa is adding up, right? You got Travis Hamonic out. You got Bernard Docker out. You got Allmark out. David Perron out. Like, But I think they can handle the players being out. They are not handling the goaltender being out. And Anton Forsberg is not the answer. And I'm sorry. It's unfortunate that he got 2 knee injuries on the same play. He needed both knees to be, you know, surgically repaired to be able to, you know, get back. And it took a while, but he's not the same guy that he was. And he was never that top echelon guy anyway. So I think the Ottawa Senators have to make a move. And not only do they have to make a move for now, because you end up going, you know, 2-8 in the next 10 if you're Ottawa. And you're way behind now, and I get it. We're talking about Buffalo being 6 points out, but having lost 13 in a row at some point, it's like, okay, you know, the East is very middling with the teams that are going up and out, up and down in the, you know, in the standings. But if you're Ottawa, not only do you have to make a move for now, what if Allmark's back flares up late March, early April in the playoffs? Do you feel confident with going with Levi Mäkinen or Anton Forsberg? I don't. So I think they got to look around to see what kind of experience they could get to be able to get there. Now, I'm not suggesting the Sabres should facilitate something with Ottawa, but like a guy like James Reimer would be a perfect kind of fit for an Ottawa Senator. I'm not suggesting they need to do that. Don't help a team that you're competing against, but...
Well, the fact you just verbalized it puts it out there. I don't know if you realize that.
I'm going to get radioed. Barney Biron says Sabres should trade Reimer to Ottawa. That's all I'm saying. But
you could have picked any other 30-plus netminder across the league, but you chose to just say Reimer.
But if Reimer was in the Western Conference, that would be a guy you look at. So now look around and find what could work for the Ottawa Senators. That's what they have to do.
Well, they're at Detroit tonight. Like, I'm sorry if I feel like I'm locked in on a tangent here, but since they talked about it, they being players and coaches last night, and since we are officially at the midway point of the season, it's kind of relevant to be looking at the standings here. So if you're a normal observer and fan of the game, you're going to say, wow, Ottawa's at Detroit tonight. This all of a sudden becomes something I'm super interested in based on the fact that Ottawa's lost 4 of 5 and Detroit has won 4 in a row after losing their first game under Todd McLellan. Like, what's happening here? What is Buffalo chasing among these teams in the Eastern Conference?
Well, they're chasing, hoping that it's not a 3-point
night. And doesn't Detroit have 6 goalies? But they could give Ottawa one of them.
Yeah, but Detroit was not going to do that. They're not going to give Ottawa a goalie. They're going to, but look.
Give them Jack Campbell.
Well, yeah. Is Ottawa making that move? I don't know if they're going to do that. But you're right. Look, if Vitek Vanacek was healthy, I think you look at Vanacek or Alexander Georgiev in San Jose, because San Jose is clearly looking at, you know, putting Askarov and give him a chance to play. So now they'd have one too many. But, you know, they have to wait for Vitek Vanacek to be good after taking a puck to the face. I think those are the type of situations you have to look and see if you can make that happen. Chicago, I don't think, would move on Peter Mrazek, but maybe they want to move on Soderblom, and Soderblom's been very good. So why not, you know, look into that? Like, that, those are the options that are out there for Ottawa right now.
Yeah, I think there's always more than what you might perceive first blush. You didn't really, not that I specifically asked the question, but like,
what are they chasing?
What are they chasing? Like, Detroit has won 4 in a row. So let me rephrase this. Like, is Montreal for real now that they've won 8 of 10? Is Detroit for real now that they've put together 4 in a row? Like, what are we looking at here?
They're not chasing a ghost, but I feel like that second wild card holder is about as elusive as a ghost would be. Like, it's Montreal today. I don't think it's Montreal at the end of the week. Potentially, it could be Detroit. Potentially, it could be Ottawa. Potentially, it could be the Rangers, who are 4 points back. And the Rangers don't have Shesterkin, but...
Louis Domingue.
Louis Domingue. I get that. Jonathan Quick, Louis Domingue. But the Rangers are in my opinion, a much better team than their record shows. Mm-hmm. So could the New York Rangers be the team you're chasing right now? And let's see. Let's just say you're chasing the New York Rangers.
Well, they're technically chasing all of them.
Well, no, but let's see you're chasing the New York Rangers, because some may say the New York Rangers are going to get back in it and they're going to fall. They're going to be the second wild card team, okay, mm-hmm. at worst. Well, if you're chasing the Rangers, you're 2 points back of the Rangers. If that's your target, if you think the Rangers are going to be in the wild card spot, you're 2 points back on the New York Rangers. That's what you're chasing. Maybe you're not chasing the Montreal Canadiens 6 points. Maybe you're not even chasing the Ottawa Senators or the Pittsburgh Penguins or the Red Wings. Maybe you're chasing the Rangers and you're 2 points back. That's what it is.
I agree. I think it's an interesting way to look at it. And nothing for nothing, wild card one is held by Tampa, who has all of a sudden lost four in a row.
Yeah.
Granted, they have a million games in hand on everybody, and most people believe they are upper echelon in the Eastern Conference. But they've fallen on hard times, and it happens. And all of a sudden, everybody that was scoring has gotten a little quiet. Everybody goes through this. And so, you know, they're 1 point ahead of Montreal. That's why we're mentioning this. Like, you got to win your games in hand eventually, and maybe Tampa will, maybe they won't. Like,
and Pittsburgh, Boston is only 4 points ahead of Montreal.
Okay, so thank you. Okay. That's another one of the headlines I wanted to read.
Okay.
Bruins in need of shock trade. Hey, they have lost five of their last six games and four in a row. So is that a fair headline? Look at their point totals from their top two centers. Like, this is a real question. I think it's a valid headline.
They acquired Elias Lindholm in the summer thinking that was going to fix their center position. Now you have Zacha and Lindholm, and it's not really one or two caliber type centers that they're getting right now from those two guys. You have Morgan Geeky playing the top line with Zacha and Pasternak. Most nights, I see more of Justin Brazeau and, you know, Kastelic and Trent Frederick and those guys, like the bottom guys. I want to think that Boston is in need of a shock trade to be able to say, hey, can they acquire a top six that's going to make a difference? More likely a center that's going to make a difference. Oh, let me think of a guy that could be a top six and play center that may be available. And we discussed it with the Sabres, Elias Pettersson. Could that be the route that the Boston Bruins need to go for them to have that shock trade?
I was thinking Mikael Granlund, but even though he's, you know, he's versatile enough, he can play everywhere, and maybe
he can play anywhere.
He's obviously half the salary of Elias Pettersson, but yeah, I get your point.
Not so much in the shock department when you think of Mikael Granlund, but if it's a shock trade, then it's a guy like Pettersson maybe on the, you know, on the radar for the Boston Bruins.
And obviously, Zadorov goes the other way.
You'd have to think that they're going to...
Feels like Vancouver fans or media or both have been clamoring for the return of Zadorov.
The return of Nikita Zadorov. Well, they need depth at defense. Vancouver needs a little help on defense. They did go after... They lost Zadorov. They got big Vinny Desharnais. But other than Quinn Hughes, and they don't have Filip Ronek right now... Yeah, they need a little help on defense.
So I find this to be all incredibly interesting on the heels of Buffalo's win last night, because it makes these games of great interest. Boston, by the way, having lost five of six, is hosting Edmonton tonight. So I would say
should be a
pretty good chance. They've dropped six of seven by the time we're back on the air tomorrow.
Yeah.
Columbus, who was 5-2-1 in their last eight games, with ultra impressive offensive, you know, performers this year, especially at home. They're taking on Pittsburgh. Struggling a little bit, but guess what? Yeah. They keep picking up points. They're 10-5-3 in the last 18 games.
But
don't keeps
you think
them
those teams,
right in the hunt.
Those teams, like you mentioned, like the Tampa Bay Lightning losing four, Boston where they're at, even Carolina, you know, I mean, yes, they won their last game, but they've had some up and down type of performances. Mm-hmm. Pittsburgh, Columbus, Philly, like there's a lot of those teams in the middle that are like, ugh. And now you're looking at Buffalo and the way they played last night against a really solid Washington Capitals team, and you're thinking, well, you know what? Like, it's not crazy. It's not crazy to think that if they played that way, if they played, I felt like this was probably their best effort in the way that they charged the net. Their big guys took the puck to the net. They took hits. They were standing there. It wasn't just Benson and Zucker. It was everybody else. And I'm thinking, okay, you played that way. That can give you a boost going into the second half of the season. 41 games left. And depending on how you look at it, yes, technically 6 points out, but you know, who are you chasing? Again, there's a lot of games that are going to be meaningful here coming up.
When you mentioned Pittsburgh losing the other night, you know who they lost to, right?
Pittsburgh's last game.
Dustin Tokarski and the Carolina Hurricanes. Yes. And the reason this is noteworthy is Dustin started the night head to toe, beautiful, all Canes equipment.
Yeah, no.
Halfway through the first period, not immediately after he gave up, I think, 2 goals on the first 2 shots. If it wasn't 2, it was 2 on the first 3. But halfway through the first period, he had switched back to his old Sabres mask. So I was like, wow, I've never seen Tokarski look so good head to toe. Like everything looked fresh and awesome. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, and guess what? He wins. And it was the same narrative through the whole game. Like sometimes there doesn't appear to be a form to it, but he's an incredible battler. And in the end, guess what? Sebastian Aho scores the OT winner because that's what he does against everybody. And he beat Sidney Crosby to the rebound to do it. And it was like, wow. Like, you have to realize sometimes that it doesn't just happen to the Sabres when Crosby's involved, like the Carolina Hurricanes with Tokarski, who's 3-1 right now through all their goaltending issues. Yeah, I just applaud the effort. But that takes us back to...
Applaud the effort. .894. He's below league average, but still, like, he's getting the job done. Like, that's why you applaud the effort.
And it ties in with Buffalo playing Ottawa next. What do the Senators do from a goaltending standpoint based on the injury that they're dealing with Linus Ullmark? Like, you chose not to bring up John Gibson when we started that topic earlier.
That's not on the radar for me when I think of Ottawa.
Right.
Bringing in a John Gibson, that's because you would think Linus Ullmark is in probably a lot longer and a lot worse situation than bringing in a John Gibson. I don't think they're there yet. It's concerning. It's concerning for Ullmark. It didn't look like there wasn't a collision like Shesterkin. There wasn't a moment in the game where you're like, this is where he got hurt. And after the first period, he was gone. And it was, you know, we know what with Rasmus Dahlin, back spasm. Austin Matthews in Toronto, apparently it's back issue related. He's been back now, but, you know, there was a big question mark with him. Like, when it comes to back, we know was Mike Bossy back as well, right? Mm-hmm. But Mario Lemieux is probably the most famous back injury that somebody had to retire and couldn't even tie up his skates. His trainer had to tie up his skates to play games. Like, that's what back does to you. And as a goaltender, the back, wow, that would be problematic.
Yeah, scrolling through the entire list of the NHL, like Ville Husso, there aren't a lot of other, I mean... If Ottawa was trying to get something established that would be a clear upgrade, I don't know if they're willing to take on that cost right now.
No.
And there are just so many underwhelming numbers across the league. Could Columbus move off of a Tarasov, let's say, right? Because Jet Greaves has performed pretty well.
Or Merzlikins.
Yeah, but I don't think they're going to go that route. I mean, I think Columbus would want to stay attached to Elvis right now, that he does have 13 wins. I know it sounds a little strange, but I think they wouldn't want to totally rock the boat with what's been going on. But this is a good discussion. I mean, if you were to say, okay, Ottawa's going to help Columbus, Columbus is going to help Ottawa out here, although they wouldn't want to look at it that way. Like, who would be the most likely to be dealt from Columbus? Merzlikins, Tarasov, or Greaves?
I think it's Tarasov, you're right. But again, it's because...
But his numbers are terrible, and everybody would look at it like, how is this fixing Ottawa's goalie problem, right?
We'll help you because we'll get something in return, but we don't want to help you that much, so we're going to get you Tarasov, right? Correct. That's the way it is. Like, that's kind of like how you... If a team wants to do it in the Eastern Conference, that's kind of how you got to look at it. I mean... Would the Sabres say, okay, we make you Felix Sandstrom available, right? And say, oh, you want to maybe better than Levi Merilainen and maybe even better than Anton Forsberg. We'll make Felix Sandstrom available. He's playing well in Rochester. Devin Levi is the guy in Rochester. He's number four on the depth chart here. What can we get in return? Like that to me would be like the Sabres' way of saying, we can help you, but we're not really helping you. We want something in return. Like we're just giving you somebody that is down our depth chart.
Like Spencer Martin's in the AHL right now. Devin Cooley, who was in Buffalo's organization last year. I mean, he's once again having an absolutely, he is having a lights out year with the top team in the American Hockey League based in Calgary. You know, he's 17-6, his goals against sub two right now. Again, it's inexperience though at the NHL level. So these are, you know, the first guy, when we started this kind of minor discussion, the first guy I thought of was Phoenix Copley.
Yeah.
You know, like I mean, LA. He's not getting another look in LA in all likelihood. He's 10-4 in the AHL this year. Ontario's been good as the Kings farm club. So
about Cal Peterson? What about the Flyers? And we'll make you Cal Peterson.
You know, that's a name I have not even looked at this year.
You know, I mean, some were actually talking the other day about the Flyers, Sam Ersson going down and Kolosov having a tough go and Fedotov came back. But somebody said, wouldn't Cal Peterson be better than what the Flyers have right now? Like, I mean, I get it. Maybe that's another one.
Is 8-10-2 with Lehigh Valley. He's got a 325 and an 884. So
it's not good.
No. And of course, but those numbers are often not really transferable from one to the next. Rarely are. But yeah, it,
different situations.
This discussion just kind of proves the point, right? Imagine being a general manager. Imagine being in this position where the guy you went out and acquired, and it was arguably the steal of the summer, and you signed him to the extension, and Linus Allmark's had three different injury situations already, and your team is good enough to be right where they are, which is in the hunt, and you feel like you have to make a move. I'm sorry, but I'm sitting at my desk or wherever I am all day long going, what is the answer here? I know it's your job. Like, you got to have the answer. You got to be bold, make the commitment, do what you can for your team. But, Marty, it's not easy when you look at the field of netminders across the league.
No, it's not. And, look, I mean, you've got options. You've got to be thinking now is the time if you're Ottawa. And there's others around, right? I still think that the Oilers are going better right now, but should the Oilers be updating in net? Because is Stuart Skinner a Stanley Cup champion-type goaltender? I don't think so. He got them to the finals last year, but maybe that's the one piece you need to upgrade in Edmonton to be able to go all the way. Like, there's a lot of that discussions. We're 2 months away from the trade deadline, by the way, which is March 7th. So we are January 7th today, I believe. So, yeah, so we're 2 months away.
For that.
Huh? Balloons? Balloons?
Like
it's an anniversary 2 months away.
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, so I mean, those are all conversations that we could have. Oh, and by the way, when we draw it back to goaltending,
please do.
UPL last night. Like I felt like UPL was good last night. I know that the numbers at the end of the night is a sub 900 save percentage night, but you know what? He had the overtime, which had to be good. He made some big saves. The shootout, which he gives up the first one. I mentioned in the postgame last night, when you give up a goal in the first one, often it throws your rhythm all off. You're like, okay, was I too far out? Was I not far out enough? Did I commit? Did I? Like, it just gets in your head, right? And he adjusted really well. But more importantly, this was only the second time this year that he's won a game giving up three goals or more. And it was three goals against Detroit in a 5-3 win early in the season, and now three goals in this one. Like, I get that. You know, there's games where, well, he's lost 6-5, right? The Sabres had offense and he's given up too many or whatever. But we've not seen the Sabres win games this year when giving up three or more goals. And last night was one of those. Put that in the bank. Say, hey, you know what? Yeah, we gave up, you know, a one-goal lead with 4 minutes left. But you found a way to win with giving up three goals, and Luukkonen found a way to win giving up three goals only the second time this year. He's got 12 wins now, two of them or three goals that he gave up, 10 of them or two or less. Like, yeah, I mean, when you give up two or less, you should win. But finding a way to win when you give up three, that's a challenge, and the Sabres have been challenging that way this year.
The only goal he gave up in the shootout was to Dubois, who's 9 of 20 now in his career, which is an exceptional number. Alex Tuch has great numbers as well. Yep. 50% as a Sabre. What did you make of his game-extending goal last night?
A big-time move in a very pressured situation. And he doesn't score on that one. Game's over. Washington wins. That's it, right? And then Luukkonen had to make a save after that, which was on... John Carlson, which was important, and then he stopped Chychrun. But that move, like, I feel like that move and that goal is a lot more pressured situation than J.J. Paterka. J.J. Paterka is clean slate. He goes in. It's the extra guy. If he misses, Luukkonen can make a save. But if Tuck had missed, the game's over. That's why I felt like that was a big-time move in that situation to be able to pull that pullback and slide it in, and he just got the stick of Charlie Lindgren. Like, at that time, I'm sure his heart, like, skipped a few beats when he saw that it hit the paddle a little bit and just went inside the post on the other side.
Did the Tuck success story remind you of something? I feel like you mentioned it last night.
Well, yeah, and we just put it on social media, and I know social media, we put on X earlier today about your all-time Sabres shootout team, like your three shooters, and we've gotten a lot of response on there, and it's fun to go back and revisit some of those players. But my post-game thought of Tuck's move was the Jack Quinn move in the development camp, how he came in on Devon Levi, and Devon Levi, which was still with Northeastern at the time, kind of stumbled back and still made the save. And the reason why I'm thinking that is because Charlie Lindgren catches with the right hand. He's one of your, like, goofy, I'm saying goofy, Duffer, because you would catch with your right hand if you're a goalie, if you were a goalie. But the fact that his left hand has a stick, like, if your left hand is your glove, when you go back that way, you probably lay your whole glove down and your whole arm down from the armpit down onto the ice. But when it's your stick side, you feel like you got to put the stick down and not have the old your arm all the way down. So Our great people in the control room were able to superimpose the Tuck move over the Quinn body and against Devon Levi, and Levi ended up making the save. That's what I was trying to say yesterday, that the fact that Charlie Lindgren was the other way, it probably aided Tuck in achieving success in this move.
Now do Charlie over top of Levi, please.
and have Jack Quinn score, because that's how it would have worked, right? So see if you can make that happen. That's a lot tougher.
Well, it's fun in games. It's very childlike, which is actually a good reminder of what's to come at the arena this weekend. Yes. Because we're looking forward to Kids Takeover on Saturday. And it's January 11th. The Kraken are in, and we have young fans taking over, as you know. Super fun roles like junior reporter, junior PA announcer. Plus, the first 5,000 kids are going to take home a jersey lunchbox. Just visit sabres.com/tickets to purchase yours today. Much more on last night's shootout win over the Capitals, but more kind of the details within it, like lines that clicked, lines that may hold something moving forward. There was an injury that could affect the forward ranks. All of that within... another busy night ahead in the NHL. Stay with us on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Awesome win. It was a tough turnaround, long day yesterday. But their puck decisions were freaking awesome in the game. We played a hell of a game. We played the game the right way. Unbelievable job by Tucky, keeping us alive in the shootout. And JJ finishing off. Great 2 points.
Deserved the win today. Give it to you, okay. Show us off every day.
Bestowed to his countrymen the winning vest, if you will. And that's a tough way to come back in the lineup for Henry Jokiharju with a baseball of John Carlson's stick, which was inadvertent on a follow through and required Henry to be wearing a full mask the rest of the way. But that's almost always what it takes to prevail, especially when you're up against the top team in the conference.
I had to go back and look at the play. That's the play where Charlie Lindgren lost his glove. That's why I wasn't paying attention to Henry Yokiariou, because, you know, Lindgren had lost his glove. Thompson had tried to tuck it in. And yes, poor Henry was coming in because he saw the puck in the crease thinking, oh, I'm going to get a goal. I'm going to get a goal. And he ends up with a mouthful of, like, puck and stick and, you know, bloodied, and comes back with a bubble. And then he gets boarded by tough guy Dylan Strome later in the game, and he went headfirst into the boards. It was a tough game, a tough return for Yukiariu physically, but happy to see that he played well. And the other injury to note is Jiří Kulik, who halfway in the second period ended up with a lower body injury, didn't return. So from that moment, the Sabres kind of looked at, well, you know, rotating 11 forwards. They did that for a little bit in the second, but in the third, they went down to three lines, nine forwards. Lafferty ended up with one shift in the third. Obi Kubel didn't play in the third because Lindy Ruff was like, I'm keeping three lines going. Right. And that's the pace and the rhythm that we need to have right now. So Krebs went to the middle with Benson and Quinn. And that was a line. That's a line that actually did pretty good when you look at the numbers.
Where's Quinn in all of this, in your opinion?
I really think that Quinn is a little bit lost when it comes to the 5-on-5 shuffle. Where do you play him? Where do you fit him? Right. Like Peterka now has kind of found, you know, Alex Tuch as and McLeod as a line that, okay, they produced yesterday and it was good to see. And you do have Thompson and Zucker that have played well as a duo with Cousins in the middle. So Quinn is kind of lost in that 5-on-5 shuffle. I like that Lindy Ruff is using Quinn on the top power play. And I felt like that power play goal by Tage Thompson yesterday, the one-timer, was a direct impact on Peterka and Quinn's zone entry. Zone entries are so important in power play. And Dylan Cousins has had tough time with zone entries on the power play. So you need another right-hand shot because he's coming down the right wing and you want to be able to hit him on his forehand. But the play that Peterka and Quinn made and then got possession and got it back to the point to Dahlin allowed for Thompson to be open. So I think that Quinn is going to continue to be on the power play, continue to be trying to get himself more of an impact at 5-on-5, but he's kind of lost in the shuffle now when it comes to the lines. And maybe with Benson and Krebs, that's, you know, something that will give him a little bit something to look forward to.
I was really hopeful just based on how the night had started for him being on a fourth line, that in the shootout, he could have improved to 4 out of 6 lifetime. He's 3 for 6, which is good. But based on everything he's gone through this year, it would have been really great for him to have had that, you know, that goal. That would have obviously taken the pressure off of Alex Tuch in the next round. But I'm also glad that Lindy chose to use him in that situation. So that speaks more to everything you're talking about, and that it's not just a, you're not going as well as I'd like you to be going, I'm not going to use you. Like, that to me would be unnecessary stubbornness, you know, by any coach. That's not a Lindy thing. I mean, you see this in sports, right? It's like, no. There's a reason this player is here, right? And Jack Quinn has the skills. So
Jack Quinn has the skills to perform in a shootout. And I think Alex Tuch's move is probably a direct relation to Jack Quinn being able to do that move. He didn't do it. He went to the back end. But I think that, you know, Tuch was probably thinking, well, the move is open now because Jack Quinn didn't do his move. I can pull that move, and the way the goalie's playing, I can get it done. So reading off one another, right, that's important. I remember my, like, you know, a couple of years with the Rangers, we had Eric Christensen and Wojtek Wolski on the team, and they were about as skilled as you can get. They weren't John Tortorella's favorite players 5-on-5 during the game, and sometimes they didn't see the ice in the third period or overtime. Then we'd get to the shootout, and you always had Eric Christensen and Wojtek Wolski in the shootout. Why? Because they had the skills, and they were trusted in that spot. And I like that Lindy can trust Jack Quinn in that spot. Yeah, he didn't score, but to put him out there, especially after he moved him up the lineup with the Kulik injury and saying, hey, you know what? Like, We believe in you. It's just it's hard to find a spot for you right now in the top six. So just but we believe in you in the power play. We'll believe in you in the shootout as well. Like, you got to wait for the opportunity.
Chychrun's had such a nice offensive year for the Capitals. He had an opportunity to win it in overtime. He had an opportunity to extend it in the shootout. Didn't happen. But he is still top three in goals among defensemen in the NHL this year, and he is on an expiring contract. One can only assume he's going to be offered something by the Capitals reasonably soon, in your opinion. He's a $4.5 million defenseman right now. He has to be going north of seven on his next deal, right?
You obviously would think. You would think, but there's no
scenario where he makes less than seven. It's impossible. As an
I think there's a scenario
agent,
he could make between six and seven, and I think that he's proven that he can perform, and I think that that scenario could be in Washington. If the Washington Capitals are looking at their salary structure and they're like, look, we just got Pierre-Luc Dubois. We did, you know, that we want to keep you, but we'll keep you at 6.5. That's a decision that Jacob Chychrun's going to have to make. Maybe that's added a year or two at the end of the deal to try to make it longer. But
remember, Ovi's coming off the books after next year. John Carlson's near the end.
Is he? Like, no, Ovi's going to play until he's 55. So that's the thing.
He may retire the day after he breaks
Gretzky's
record.
He's going to want 1,000 goals. Like, Ovi's going to want 1,000 goals. Be the first to ever score 1,000. Be the first to score 900 and then score 1,000.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of extensions, what does one make of the Shohei Vetrano deal with the Ducks in Anaheim?
Okay, so this is an interesting deal where half of his money...
His name's Frank, by the way.
Yeah, it's not Shohei Vetrano. Frank Vetrano, but it's deferred money again. The Bobby Bonilla type of deal where he'll get almost $1 million a year for 10 years in 2035, in 10 years from now, right? So $9 million of the money, half of his contract is deferred for in 10 years from now, being paid between 2035 and 2045. That's interesting. That's interesting for a couple of things. Teams that are New York State, California, high tax kind of bracket to say, hey, the Pierre LeBrun said that the reason why, you know, Vetrano is probably going that way is that he doesn't plan to live in California after he's retired and would be probably paying less income taxes on that $9 million when he's, you know, settled somewhere in Tennessee or Florida or whatnot. So I look at a team like Buffalo being able to use those tools in the future to say, hey, we'll defer some money because if you want to live in a place where the income tax is not as much, you'll be using that tool to your advantage.
Another interesting headline today from Edmonton, the Jeff Skinner experience showing signs of life for Oilers.
Yeah, Jeff Skinner got himself on the scoreboard and, you know, a little bit, like as we know, Jeff Skinner could be a very, very good player. Skinner can.
And considering the Oilers have navigated yet another terrible start and have not had meaningful contributions from a number of players, including the injured Evander Kane, like, don't you think the Oilers are poised to be exactly what they were last year?
Probably a second half team and a playoff team that, you know, will they won back to back games with Connor McDavid not getting a point in each of those games, right? I mean, they were able to rely on what was depth scoring and, you know, Hyman playing better now and producing, you know, and so there is definitely a bit of that. But I think what we've seen out of Jeff Skinner is he gives you a little something at times and it will go for a little bit and then it kind of disappears. And I think if he can continue to produce, then the Oilers are going to like what they get out of Jeff Skinner. I liked what we saw out of Jeff Skinner when it was working. It's when it wasn't working that you're like, okay, what else are you getting?
You almost said it word for word. That was the next headline. What are they getting? The Rangers in Arthur Kaliev. They claimed him on waivers from L.A. What do we think?
And look, it's been a tumultuous start to his career with Kaliev in L.A.
Remember what I said about him last summer? He won't be on the Kings roster next year.
No, you're right. You did say that. What are they getting in New York? A young player that has kind of been in the doghouse in L.A. Maybe from, you know, not getting the chance to play an offensive role. Look, it's kind of like what they did with Capo Caco, right? They're getting a Capo Caco type player replacement. Same thing. It's Capo Caco. It's Artur Kaliev. That's what they're getting. Hopefully it works there for the Rangers, but they're getting the same thing as Capo Caco.
Are you A, surprised that Buffalo didn't pursue, or B, that the Rangers did?
I'm surprised the Rangers did. And look, I mean, the Rangers in their spot in the standings was early in the, you know, waiver wire. They were not the 22nd team to pick on the waiver. They put their waiver claim. Who knows if there was other teams past the Rangers that were going to claim Kaliev, but I'm surprised the Rangers claimed them. Just because I felt like they moved on from Capo Caco, because they're like, hey, we don't need him. We're going to move in a different direction. So they kind of filled the hole with the same type of guy.
I have two Islander headlines that don't require a comment from you. Islanders defenseman utilizing new strategy to unlock offense. And the other one is Islanders finally look like they have a promising farm system. I'm going to comment on the last part of it, yeah, because Rochester just went in to beat Bridgeport, a team that still has one win on home ice this year. So enough about the Islanders. my goodness, some things. I honestly, I can't believe it sometimes, like the way things are presented to us for our daily consumption. But we as humans tend to eat it up, right?
Well, we have to. That's what we do. And, you know, I've been truly entertained, I'll be honest with you, with the response that we're getting on social.
Oh, tell me more.
Well, because, you know, I mean, obviously, your all-time shootout Sabres list, you know, pick three players. Some people are adding a goalie. Obviously, Ryan Miller is the goalie. There's no brainer there. He's always been great in the shootout and, you know, should be that guy. But somebody said, and I think it's Cody that said, no shootout lineup is complete without Linus Omark. And I had to go back to see Linus Omark first shootout attempt against the Tampa Bay Lightning and Dan Ellis when he spun at center ice. And
not
then he did
Buffalo.
The fake slap shot and he went 5-0. That got me to laugh. So thank you, Cody, for bringing Linus Omark's name. He never did take a shootout attempt with the Sabres, though. Never made the list.
And Linus Omark should also make that list, as he was very good and continues to be in that regard. Obviously, Ryan Miller remains king. Real quick, super quick answer.
Okay.
Is Lane Hutson going to win the Calder?
I think yes.
Thank you.
I think yes.
We're back after this on Sabres Live. Stay with us.
We're back with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Marty has more Sabre-related shootout trivia. Go.
Yeah, Big Willie's got it right. He says, Briere, Vanek, Kotelik would be his top three with Connolly and Pominville as the extra rounds. That's what I have on my list. Although, did you know there's two Sabres player ever that have not scored in a shootout attempt? There's only two. Most players that have taken
Pat
a shootout
attempt. Pat one.
Well, according to Buffalo to NHL.com, I don't think he's on
the
list.
He went 0 for 1. He was the pregame host recently. You might have witnessed that. We had video of it.
Yeah, but he doesn't come out on
Your source, Mr. Baron, is
you're right. Pat Kaleda is one. You're right. And I'm NHL.com was wrong. Sorry for my there was another page.
Feeling.com wasn't wrong, but the user was not using the search functions correctly.
Yeah, user was not using the search function correctly. So, but hey, two guys that surprised me. Chris Drury went 0 for 2 and J.P. Dumont went 0 for 1. Clark
what?
MacArthur was 0 for 7 in save. Like, Grizz had some skills. He went 0 for 7. That's pretty wild.
Probably should have been cut off after 5.
He kept
Stop using him.
He went 14 for 81 in his career, but right. 0 for 7 in Buffalo.
Yeah, there was a weird time in the NHL where some of the absolute top players just begged the coach, like, I don't want to take part in this. right? Because they weren't good at it, and they felt it was embarrassing to them.
I mean, Tim Connelly went 4-for-23 as a Insane. Saber, 17%.
He should have been 14, right, for 23, based on his skill set.
100%. At the very least.
Yep. Wow.
So, anyway.
How did we end up here? It's the end of the show. We'll see you tomorrow.